Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you're listening. I am here with Will Stevens, and I am Zach McLeod, and our guest today is Owen Wild. Owen, we'll go into your story a little bit, but the way that me and Owen met was I was the assistant coach of the Anchorage Bucks back in, what summer was that?
22.
Owen was our ace of staff that year. Had a good summer. Let's see what your numbers were. 1.82 ERA in 29 innings with 43 punch outs. And we've got Will here because him and Will were roommates for, what, a year and a half? Something like that.
And this spring training, too.
In the spring training. So, Will, you got any stories about Owen? How was it living with him?
Terrible roommate. Just not a good team guy.
Bad baseball player, worst guy?
Exactly. Yep. That's exactly how I'd say it. But no, Owen's a great dude. Great on the field, great off the field. Very buttoned up. Just overall good dude to be around.
That's awesome. All right, Owen. I believe you are from Washington, correct?
I am. I'm from Tacoma, Gig Harbor.
Okay. So kind of give us a little bit of a rundown, like childhood. Were you a baseball-only guy? Were you playing multiple sports? How big was the town? You know, all that kind of stuff.
I actually played two sports in high school. Water polo. I'm not sure if you knew that, McLeod. Yeah.
Water polo guy.
So my freshman year of high school, I was looking at maybe trying tennis or something. My parents wouldn't let me play football. My brother was on the water polo team, and they didn't have enough players, so he decided that I was going to be on the water polo team. So I pretty much got dragged into the pool, and this actually started a week before high school did. So I just got dragged and thrown into a pool, and I started playing water polo. I wasn't very good at swimming. I could throw the ball decently hard, but my freshman year was just trying not to drown every single game. And then by about halfway through my sophomore year, I figured out kind of how to tread water, how to like elevate out of the water so you can actually play water polo. And then I was just like our shooter the whole time, so had a blast doing that. I would do that in the fall and then play baseball in the spring.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Do you feel like that got you in shape, like pretty good shape?
Oh,
I would
yeah.
assume it's like a tough, like just aerobic sport with treading water for, I don't even know, how long are the games?
They were 7-minute quarters, but the bigger, when we played at bigger schools, double deep pools means that you can't touch the bottom at any point. So you're kind of just in there. Like my sophomore year, I was like kind of a bench player. Like I'd swing in for varsity games and I was like, get me out of this pool about 5 minutes after I got in every single time. But then by my senior year, I would play the whole game and just be tired. Like that's just, you kind of just get used to it. And we had a lot of practices where you wear like a weight belt on your shoulders and then tread water and keep your arms out of the water. So that, I feel like that helped my leg strength. Obviously I've got pretty big legs, but water polo kind of helped me slim down every fall and then try to put the weight back on for baseball season.
All right. So the town that you grew up in, like how does the high school systems work there? Like were you guys like a small, a medium sized or a bigger school?
So we were 3A in Washington. That's the second largest class. I mean, not a crazy big high school. Washington State high schools don't have like that 6A, like Texas or Florida. We were, baseball-wise, we were in the best division, though. 3A baseball is better than 4A when I was in high school. So we played up there with, there were a couple other teams, like Southridge High School is pretty good at baseball, and then a lot of those Seattle teams were pretty good. And my freshman year, I was on C team, but our high school varsity won the state championship that year. So okay. we had a pretty good program.
We can kind of start talking about your baseball career in high school. So you weren't a guy that like stepped on the field and you're immediately like varsity guy, like the dude. Like how did that kind of progress into, I'm assuming your senior year, you ended up committing to Gonzaga and playing there. So eventually you turned into that guy. So like, how did that work? Freshman year on C team, was it just like undersized or I guess your team was really good, like you were saying. So it might've just been like an experience thing.
Yeah, I mean, my freshman year, I was probably about 80 miles an hour. So, I mean, I could have contributed to the varsity team. I would have been some sort of reliever for them. But at the time, they had, I think, 3 or 4 Division I baseball players, commits anyway. Our pitching staff had 3 really, really good pitchers, so I wouldn't have pitched for them anyway. I went down to C team. All the freshmen were on C team. We had a lot of fun. I think we only played like 10 or 15 games, but we probably won most of them. And then that sophomore year is when I kind of made that jump and started playing varsity baseball.
And so your freshman year, were you always unathletic and just a PO, or did you actually hit too?
I mean, I actually was the 2A. Somehow I won. We had like team awards. I won the MVP and the Cy Young to the dismay of this other guy that was also pitching well. I don't know why I won both of them. That feels kind of over the top, but
yeah,
the coach picked those awards.
you're the Washington C team Shohei Ohtani? Is that what you're trying to say?
I mean, I think I hit 490. Like, I'm not going to lie. I had a pretty good season.
Have you seen that the girl from Nebraska? It's like Jordy Ball or something like that. Her name is. Okay, so
Wait, the home run hitter? I think I have seen her with the intentional walks. Okay, so
No, that's the girl from, I think, Arkansas maybe. But the girl from Nebraska, she's their ace pitcher. She won the Big Ten player and pitcher of the year. She had like 1.5 ERA with like 200 innings and punched out 280 and then hit like 450 and her slugging percentage was 1. Wow. So that's kind of crazy.
I mean,
like 1.5 OPS.
I mean, if someone ever put a bat in my hand, I mean, I don't know what would happen.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they're probably just making you pitch to humble you. So like whenever you get up to the big leagues, they'll hand you a bat and be like, all right, Owen, you can now fulfill.
Yeah,
no,
that's going to be a no-go. At this point on, I do not want to hit. Professional pitchers throw way too hard and I cannot see it.
So you're getting to high school, sophomore year, junior year. What year did you kind of bounce up into varsity and kind of start getting your feet wet there?
It's my sophomore year. I was our number two pitcher. We had a guy committed to the University of Portland. He was our ace. I was supposed to play like corner outfield game one and then start game two every week. Our center fielder went down grade ineligible. He like failed some classes. So I was our next fastest outfielder, if you can believe that. I was playing center field.
Like you said, your baseball team was good.
We made state both of the 2 years that I played varsity. I was playing center field game one. I would air it out in pregame, try to throw out runners in our pregame inning outie. And then my arm would hurt for game two. And I was probably about 82, 84 my sophomore year. But I had a pretty good season. I think being the number one, both of us had pretty comparable numbers. And we won our district championship and made it to state. And then we lost to O'Day, some Seattle team that beat us. We had a good year though. We were a pretty good team.
Okay. And then junior year, did you kind of make when did you make your velo jump? Because is that when you made it?
Yeah,
that was your junior year?
My junior year for sure. My sophomore year going into the summer, I had an outing where I was like 85 to 87 and I might've hit 90. And then I tore my hamstring right after that game. So that kind of killed that momentum. I might've been a higher recruit or something out of high school, but I took a couple weeks off and then played out the rest of my sophomore summer. But going into my junior year, that's when I was sitting about 85, 87 every outing. And in high school playoffs, I think I hit 91. That was kind of my first big like velo jump. But okay. Then going into that summer, a bunch of outings at like 87, touching 90. And then at this area code tryout is when I hit 90 or 91 in front of a couple schools, got a couple offers, and ended up committing the end of that summer.
Cool. And you ended up going to Gonzaga, which we can talk about your time at Gonzaga, but what were some of the other schools that you were kind of considering during that period of time?
Yeah, I mean, before Seattle U was kind of the other one I was looking at, but before the Division I schools got in there, I actually was looking at Lower Columbia Community College. They had a really good program down there, really nice facilities for a community college, and the coaching staff was pretty cool. They were the ones that actually saw me that playoff game in high school, that saw me hit 91 and said, "We want you to come here." And I was like, "Hey, maybe that sounds cool."
the NWAC, which we always talk about, you know, like junior college and stuff, but the NWAC is a really good JUCO conference. It's a really good JUCO. It's a little bit different. They're kind of like their own entity, kind of like the California JUCO system for people that don't know. But they're one of two junior college conferences that I know of that swing wood as well. So like I know the Arizona JUCO system does that. And so up there, you know, like when I used to recruit and stuff, you look at guys in the NWAC, if it's like a hitter hitting like 280 with like five or six home runs, you're like, man, get them to the Midwest where it's not raining the entire time. They can swing a metal bat. They're going to be, you know, like a 330 hitter with 10 homers. So like it's more of a pitcher friendly, I guess, league is what I would say. Because, I mean, you can talk about it, but I'm sure your high school games, it was just like rainouts all the time and it's cold early on in the spring. But yeah, those JUCOs are really good. I played with a bunch of guys that were out there. So, but what made you end up deciding to go with Gonzaga over the other schools?
Yeah, I mean, it came down to fit. That's the biggest thing. I mean, I took a visit up to Seattle, and I also took a visit to Gonzaga and Spokane, Washington. Just kind of felt like home. Really, really love the pitching coach there, Brandon Harmon. I think he does a great job with his pitchers. A lot of them have been drafted in the last couple of years. And his biggest thing was just kind of letting us get better. And there's some other programs where they kind of micromanage a little bit too much. Like, I've seen guys, like, have to start their catch play on a knee and all throw at the same time, like, in unison. It looks weird. It is weird. It's a very, like, pro-style training environment at Gonzaga. And some of the guys coming out of that ahead of me, actually, Alec Jacobs in the big leagues, he was their Friday guy at that point. And watching some of those guys throw, I was like, this is a place I could get better and hopefully move on to the next level.
Yeah, we can kind of talk about fit because we talk about that a lot with guys where it's like, hey, are you, and you know, Will was a good example, like went to a JUCO and then went to a Division One, and we talked about with him one time, you know, like how would that have gone if you would have taken your Division One offers out of high school? And it's like, well, I wouldn't have played that much. And maybe you can talk about your freshman year. You threw two innings, you know, you came back and then you ended up throwing 74. So like, what was the biggest jump, you think? Was it just a bunch of guys older than you that were taking up innings? Were you not ready yet? Like, what do you feel like contributed to that jump up in innings and just time on the mound?
Yeah, so in high school, looking at the team, my senior year of high school, COVID hit. So we weren't playing any baseball when I was a senior. But before COVID hit, I think I was in Disneyland, actually, and I was pulling out my phone watching Gonzaga play at Arkansas. And they ended up getting swept in four, but I was watching all the freshman pitchers come out, and they were all kind of low 90s and decent command, but not crazy, crazy good. And I was thinking I'd be able to get in there and go compete. I had no idea what I was throwing at the time because I wasn't playing games. But getting to campus, I was 87, touching 90 in the fall, which was good but not great. The only problem was the first scrimmage, I think we had eight guys go over 96. For a mid-major school, that's not bad. So right after that first weekend, I was like, wow, like I need to get better if I want to play. We left school at Thanksgiving. They didn't have us come back to campus they were worried about COVID. And so I put on 20 pounds from Thanksgiving to New Year's when I came back. And then I came back, I was 88, 91, maybe 92. Looking good, feeling good. And they told me at the end of the fall I wasn't on the travel roster. But then by the spring when we were leaving, I made the travel roster. So we flew down to Arizona, was our first trip in Surprise to go play like Oregon State Kansas State, I think. I ended up getting in the Oregon State game. Two innings, two runs. I mean, not my best, but it was all right. We ended up getting blown out. Obviously not ideal. And that kind of pushed me to the back of the bullpen. We flew in some guys that didn't travel week one. And then my second outing was at Dallas Baptist, and I ended up giving up back-to-back jacks. So obviously not what you want to see out of a freshman pitcher. And they ended up, we had a home series, and then they left for a Texas Tech TCU trip, and they left without me. So I ended up not traveling for the next 6 or 7 weeks, whatever it ended up being. I was throwing well in the midweeks, but like our midweek inter-squad scrimmages, getting the hitters ready to go play on the weekend while I'm going to go sit on the berm and watch the game. But I ended up traveling midway through the season, but I was like our last guy. They weren't planning on putting me in any games. There were a couple games down the stretch I thought maybe they could have, whether it be like a blowout, whether we're up big or down big. If they wanted to put me in, they could have. But I was told that kind of RPI was so important and every run matters and whatever. And yeah. I'm watching them. We put our closer in, Brody Jesse, 97 to 100. We put him in at the end of a blowout game against the University of Washington because we have a personal grudge against them, I guess. So I watched him strike out the side in a 12-1 ball game. I mean, I was like, yeah, that could have been my inning, but obviously it didn't end up mattering. I felt like I just needed to get more game experience to kind of get more dialed in, and that was what I was able to do my freshman summer. I ended up going out to the West Coast League, Yakima Valley Pippins. And as soon as I got back on the field after not playing all spring, that's when my biggest velo jump happened. And I ended up that first outing, I was like 91, 93. Next outing, 92, 94. Outing after that, 93, 94, 94, 95. And then kind of settled in like 2-4 for that whole summer.
Nice. I think, you know, one thing we always talk about on the podcast, we've had different guys, you know, like John Means, established big leaguer, was a JUCO guy. And he talked about how, like, at the beginning of his freshman year at his JUCO, like he was pitching the midweek games against four-year schools JV teams. And so, like, you know, and he's a guy that made all the way to the big leagues and, you know, made an all-star team and threw a no-hitter. And so we always talk about how development is not, you know, like necessarily an A to B thing. And I think a lot of times people will look at guys like yourself, like you're a seventh round draft pick, and we'll end up talking about your draft day, but you know, you're a draft pick, upper half of the drafts. You know, people a lot of times just assume like, okay, like this guy got in there and he was, you know, the best at his high school, and then he went into his college and he just started throwing right away. And I always tell, especially the high school kids in our facility, like, go look at innings thrown by freshmen you know, at big schools, or even, it doesn't really matter the level, just a four-year school, like, there's not a lot of freshmen that get innings. And same thing with hitters, like, there's just not that many at-bats that go around for freshmen. And it's hard to, like, explain, like, when you're at Gonzaga, your coach is hired to win games. And so, like, Owen Wild may have had more potential than half the pitchers on the roster, but he wasn't ready to win that game against the University of Washington. And so you have to, like, kind of wait, and you have to give those innings to the guys that help you win that game that day. And so, and you went right into what I was going to ask you about your summer league, like, how important are those innings when you know, you get two innings the entire year, and then you're expected to come back in the fall and compete for playing time. And so going into that summer, what was kind of your mindset? Were you just, like, eager to get on the mound, or were you viewing this as, like, okay, like, every start I make, I've got to figure X out, Y out, so that I can go back to Gonzaga and compete the next year?
Yeah, that's, I mean, at the down the stretch, so there were actually two freshman pitchers in my class, and he got 0.2 innings and I got 2.2 our freshman year. So we were roommates. Solid. Yeah, we were roommates all year. And I remember, like, down the stretch, we made a regional. We went to Eugene. We won our first game. We're, like, fired up that we won. Our Friday guy threw a complete game shutout. He's in the big leagues now. He beat LSU by himself, Alec Jacob. Padres. Beat LSU by himself. We're fired up. We're like, let's do this whole thing. And then the next day, we lost to the University of Oregon. And it was like, that's not good, whatever. And then we played LSU again and we lost. And then there were a bunch of, like, older guys that were pretty heartbroken. Their careers maybe were over. Or we had a great run. We didn't get as far as we wanted. And I remember me and my freshman roommate, obviously we were upset that we lost, but we're like, man, we finally are going to get to play now. Like, we can go to summer ball and play baseball again. I think the biggest piece is just getting innings and getting back into games. I think games really make you better, especially if you're not getting in there. Like, that's why I would tell high school guys, if you're dead set on Division I baseball and then you don't play for a whole year or two, like, you might not get as better as you would have gotten if you had gone the junior college route and gotten to play for 2 years. But yeah, just going into that summer, I actually was out of the bullpen. So I got there. I don't know if Gonzaga told them to put me in the bullpen or if they already had their starters lined up, because I got there a little bit late because we were in that regional. But I got there and I was in the bullpen. I ended up basically becoming our closer. It was me and another guy. We would just throw every other day. And I felt like that helped me a lot, because I was looking at becoming a reliever at Gonzaga the next year if I could break onto the pitching staff. We only lost the Friday guy. I was the only guy that left. So knowing that I had to get a lot better to actually pitch that next year, otherwise I was just going to be in the same spot I was the year before. So that's what, as soon as that velo jump started happening, I felt pretty good about my opportunity to play that next year at Gonzaga.
That's awesome. I think the hard part too is, because I'm a firm believer in, especially like working with hitters, right? Like, there's no substitute for live at bats. Like, there's a lot of things we can do to make you look good or feel good in the cage, but you know, you really need to stress test, like, is your swing working against two, three different kinds of pitches? And so I think it's kind of the same thing for pitchers. I think we can do a lot of stuff, or guys can do a lot of stuff, drill work, you know, whatever. But it's, you know, it's a totally different animal when you have to get in on the mound and there's a guy in the box and you have to get him out. And I was just talking to a kid about this the other day, because, you know, I was talking about the importance of just like getting innings against hitters where there is like consequences. Because in a bullpen, sure, you can simulate a live at bat, but if you throw four balls and then you pipe a fastball down the middle, there's no punishment for that in a bullpen because there's no guy hitting it. And so, you know, I'm right there with you. I think in-game reps are so important so that you can kind of figure out how to navigate different scenarios, because that's what you're asked to do. When you go back to Gonzaga, they don't care that you threw two innings last year. Like, they need guys that are going to win the game now. What do you think, I guess, personally, Owen, because you and Will are kind of in the kind of like the training boom generation, where, you know, like when I was playing, I'm older than you guys, like there wasn't as much training supplies, you know, like we hit off machines and we had our game bat and baseballs, you know, that we hit with. And now, you know, when I was in college, guys were starting to throw like plyo balls and do some med ball work and stuff like that. Where do you think, you know, like the training and the competing side can kind of like, you know, have a marriage where it can make you the best player you can be? Where do you kind of draw the lines, or where do you see the purpose of both of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big supporter of all the stuff that's been taken over the baseball world by storm. Plyo balls, med balls, water bags, like all the yep. different tools that you can use to throw harder or have better stuff. I mean, I think that's all good for the game. But you're right, there has to be a line that we draw at some point, whether that's certain bullpens, you just don't worry about your stuff and just go execute. But the biggest line for me is when you go out on the game mound, I mean, you can't really be worried about what your stuff is in the moment. That's a big conversation we've had, even in pro ball, is obviously you want super nasty stuff to be able to get everybody out. But when you're out on the field, it doesn't matter what your spin rate is or how much carry you have on your fastball or how nasty your breaking ball is if you're not throwing strikes, competing, and getting guys out. Watching a guy, there was a guy that walked a guy and then got two ground outs and got out of the inning and comes back in. He's like, what's my breaking ball at? Or it doesn't matter. You didn't throw strikes. And that's kind of where the training stuff's kind of taking over. It's like, I can't compete unless my fastball has 23 inches of carry. But if you have 15 inches of carry, but you throw it in the right spots and you throw hard, you're going to be fine. Like, that's ultimately what it comes down to, is just competing and being able to execute pitches over and over, even if they hit it, even if the umpire doesn't give you the call. And that's that. The stuff is secondary. That's the biggest thing is just competing.
Yeah, and then on the hitting side, right? I was just talking to one of my pro guys today, and we were kind of going through some stuff, and you know, we were talking about like, you know, like when we're training, like we're going to do these things, but then when we go off the machine or we're hitting live, like we're not thinking about our swing anymore. Like, all your training needs to show up as you're competing. And you shouldn't be thinking about it, because it's like, you get guys like Will, he's throwing like 98. Like, you can't be thinking about like, am I loading into my back hip, or do I feel pressure in my foot here? It's like, well, you've already lost because the ball's coming at you, you know, 98 miles an hour, or they're throwing a slider. And so I think that's the hard part, is like, kids especially, they have a hard time like drawing that line where it's like, okay, when I'm in my drill work and I'm in my bullpen, like I'm thinking about my body, I'm getting it to move like this. But then like whenever the game is happening and I step between the lines, like now it's just about getting out, you know, executing a situation, executing a pitch, you know, those kind of things. And I think that's kind of where, you know, I guess for me as a coach, like, you kind of have to get better at explaining that. Like, hey, when we're in the cage, like, these are what we're doing. Hey, we're hitting off the machine now. These are 90-mile-an-hour, 95-mile-an-hour fastballs. Like, we just got to start getting the barrel there. Like, we can't be thinking about what our body's doing when the ball's traveling 95 miles an hour. So it was good to kind of hear that from your perspective, because you guys are living in a lot more than, you know, we ever did, just with the amount of tools there are out there, and then social media, I'm sure, can get crazy with that kind of stuff. You're seeing different guys do different things, and you're like, well, maybe I should try that, and then you can kind of get lost in the weeds of everything.
Yeah, there's actually something I saw from, I think it was Paul Skeens, talking about letting his body self-organize. It's like, we do so many reps, whether it's hitting or pitching. Like, I've thrown so many bullpens, so many pitches in my life at this point, especially with whatever changes I've made to my arm action or my lower half or my lead leg block, whatever. It's like, I've made so many reps. I've made so many reps already that by the time I get out to the game mound, I just forget about all of it and let my body do what it wants to do, and just focus on competing and executing.
Exactly. It's the same thing with hitters. It's like, hey, you know, like, you want to see this more in game. Like, well, let's work on it in the tunnel, but then when we go to the game, just go compete. And then after, you know, working on it every day for a month, you're going to see it more often in the game. Just go compete. Put yourself in, like, you know, tough environments to get your body to execute the way it needs to go. And then it'll happen, especially with the higher level athletes you get. You know, hey, I'm struggling with four-seam carry fastballs. It's like, well, let's set a machine up with four-seam carry fastballs, and let's just see how good we can get at it the next few weeks, and then you'll probably see a good difference in the game. I'm sure it's the same thing on the pitching side, like you're saying, with like lead leg block, all this stuff. It's like, yeah, you can do that during the week, but when you're making your start, Owen, I'm sure you're not like on the mound pitch by pitch going like, oh, you know, I threw a strike there, but my lead leg block was, you know, not very good, so I better really focus on this lead leg block this next pitch. So I mean, I'm just assuming there, but
no, I mean, you're absolutely right. One big thing that we're working on right now is trying to slow me down out of the stretch. I'm rushing a little bit in terms of how fast I am to home plate, and maybe it's taking a tick or two off my velo. So this whole past week, we've been working on different things about maybe bringing my left knee over the rubber or holding it for a second. We've done all these different drills, but like, if I go out for my start, I'm throwing tomorrow, but if I go out for my start and there's a runner on first base, I'm not going to worry about where my left knee is. Like, it's either going to get there or it's not, but I'm going to be worried about the hitter that I'm trying to get out and the base runner that might be trying to steal a bag off me.
Yeah, and the theory is, right, is like, over the course of time, if you're working on where your left knee is, like, for, I read an article one time, it was like 6 weeks of, you know, like, you know, pointed, you know, training is where things start to come up consistently on the field. So if you're doing that for 4 to 6 weeks, you know, you could probably turn on the tape from now to 6 weeks from now, and you'd be like, hey, you know what, my knee is getting in that position a lot more, and it's just because of the repetitions during that training portion of your day, not the competing portion of the day. But yeah, so to kind of go back, like talking about that summer going into the fall, like your next year you made a huge jump, and we can kind of talk about that pitching rotation, because I remember me and you were talking around the draft whenever, what did we do, we went like bowling or something like that in Alaska and the draft was going on. But your staff that year was stacked, and you broke into the starting rotation. You threw 74 innings, punched out 83 guys, and you guys had one of the best pitching staffs in the country that year. So maybe you can kind of talk about the guys and just what that environment was like that year.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the biggest pieces of my development at Gonzaga, was just the guys I was able to work out with and pick their brains and get better from. That year, our Friday guy was Gabriel Hughes. He ended up getting drafted 10th overall to the Rockies in the first round. And then going into the year, our Saturday, Sunday was a combination of Will Kempner and Tristan Vreeling. Both those guys ended up getting drafted in the third round. The only reason I was able to get into that weekend rotation was because William Kempner hurt his finger on a start after we were in Stillwater playing against Oklahoma State. He hit 100 in the first inning, ended up going five or six strong innings, and his finger was hurting the next day. He said it was maybe his changeup or something, but that got me in the rotation, and I was in it for most of the year while Will was down with that injury. And then when he came back, I mean, he was sidearm in 97 to 99. Like, I wasn't going to stop that guy from pitching on the weekend. So I started piggybacking him down the stretch. And when we made the regional, our game one, game two was Gabriel Hughes and then Will Kempner. But I was glad for the opportunity. Obviously, you never want to wish for a guy to get hurt, but otherwise I probably would have been starting midweek games or coming out of the pen in leverage situations on the weekend. I mean, I would have been in that pitching staff anyway, like helping the staff win games in some capacity, but taking over the Sunday role really helped me develop as a pitcher, because I would watch Gabe and Tristan throw Friday, Saturday, and see what they were doing well, and go out there and try to compete. And the biggest thing, as you know, Sundays on getaways days, really any day, is how quickly can you get that game over. That's how you make position players love you, is quick pace games, striking guys out, yes, not walking guys, time between pitches. If you can have a quick tempo, quick pace, I mean, everybody that's playing the game is going to love you. So that was, I remember we made that switch from I was throwing Saturday to I was throwing Sunday. Reeling was kind of a slower tempo guy. That's just how he was working that year. And so when we made that switch and I was throwing Sundays, our Sunday games were like 2 hours long, 2 hours 15, get in there, get out of there, jump on a plane, go home kind of thing. So
that would have been
had
the
a
best.
Blast that year.
The pitch clock is one of my favorite things that has been added. It gets rid of the guys that are human rain delays. As a position player, you're always very, very happy when you had a guy that was quick paced, get in there, get out. Sometimes when the tempo is slow like that, it can kind of put you to sleep, and then you get a ball hit to you, you're like, oh, you know, and kind of wake up. But your pitching staff that year, just to kind of go through, you guys had, Gabriel Hughes, first round pick, you mentioned him, Tristan Vreeling, third round pick, yourself, you're a seventh round pick the following year, Kempner, third round pick, and then Brody Jesse was a 10th round pick. So you guys had on that staff, and then you had a freshman, Aiden McGee, who ended up getting drafted a couple years later in the ninth. So you guys had six top 10 round picks on that pitching staff. And to kind of go back, like, you know, it looks like Cade kind of was in the same situation. You got 10 innings as a freshman, but you guys had a bunch of guys that were, you know, just a little bit more polished. So I'm assuming he got more innings the following year, probably.
Cade got like a two or three midweek starts. He just played third base for us all year. I think he won freshman of the year was in the running for it. And then his sophomore year, which would have been my junior year, he got hurt. Otherwise, he probably would have pitched a little bit, but I think he also wanted to focus on hitting because he had a pretty good bat. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's cool. So he ended up getting drafted as a hitter then?
Yeah. Yeah. He was
that's
a hitter.
Awesome.
He played third base for us for 2 years and then transferred over to Texas Tech for his draft year. Obviously played well enough to get picked up by the Cardinals, and that's where he's, I think he's in Palm Beach right now with the Cardinals.
That's awesome. And then how did you guys end up finishing that year? I mean, you guys went 37-19, 20-7 in conference. So how did the playoffs end up going? I don't remember.
Yeah, obviously we had a really good year. I think we won every single weekend. We either tied or won every weekend. So all those three game sets, we took two games every single time, which was super cool as a team. I don't think we ever had like a unhappy flight home unless it was, man, we could have swept them and we dropped the Sunday game. right? But we made it to the conference tournament. We dropped, I think we lost to San Diego in the championship, but we'd already earned the at-large for sweeping Oklahoma State on the road and some other big non-conference wins. We went down to the Blacksburg Regional. We lost game one to Columbia. We won game two against Wright State, and then we lost our third game against Columbia again. So kind of a disappointing end. We just... pieces didn't line up the right way. I mean, it's baseball. That's kind of how it goes. But a lot of those pitchers that you mentioned had really, really good seasons. And it just happened to be that the one weekend where we didn't have all of our pieces going at full, like they didn't all throw super well, was ended up being our last weekend of the year. So tough way to end it there. But anyway, obviously really good year. Nothing to be sad about.
Yeah, for sure. And then after that, that was that summer that we met, and I remember me, you, and Mason would lift a lot at the
Alaska Club, I think. It was just Alaska Club.
Yeah. But we would always lift there, and then it was like me, you, wasn't it, Kai and Brad, right? It was always there, yeah. So all the Gonzaga guys, always enjoyed, you know, coaching you guys. I thought you guys were a lot of fun. And then that summer you threw a lot. I know you were kind of on like an innings count just because you'd thrown so much. I think you ended up throwing like 30 innings for us or something like that. But you had to skip a couple starts at the beginning. Through our playoff game, we lost like 2-1 or something like that. It was a bummer. And then the following year, you come back. You didn't throw that?
No. They moved it around. Kai.
Yeah,
they
that's right.
Bumped the schedule right. up ahead of whatever, so I didn't. Me and Hansel, neither of us threw.
Yeah, that's right. But then the following year, you come back. You're kind of like the only guy that threw a ton of innings to come back from that staff, correct?
Yeah, no, I think the next most innings was like, it was less than 10, I think, was the next most. Guys that came back for that next year, I think I had 70-something, and the next most had 10 or 8, whatever it was.
Yeah, and so you took, like, personally, you, like, peaked. You had 95 innings, which is a lot of innings. And 105 Ks. And I remember we talked a lot that summer at that weird, wherever we had to travel in Alaska, and then we had to stay in that weird
Kenai,
hotel.
Kenai,
and then they changed.
We stayed in a morgue. Loved it.
They changed a morgue, Will, into like a bunker-style like hotel thing for the teams that would go there and play. So we were there for a week. I remember we were talking one night, and I remember telling you, I thought the biggest thing that would change from you from college to pro ball is, you know, you're a high spin guy, so you would throw at the top of the zone a lot. And in college, they just don't call that strike as often. And so I remember, like, you get frustrated sometimes when you'd walk guys. And I was like, yeah, but those are, like, they're strikes. They're just not, they don't call them as much. And I guess in pro ball, which we can kind of talk more about your draft here in a second, do you feel like that's been something that's kind of weighed in your favor? Because I remember in college you liked to throw up a lot. So is that something you're still doing
not so much anymore? With the Rays specifically, we throw everything down the middle. That's kind of our philosophy, is to middle, everything until you get to two strikes and then kind of expand. I felt like last year in A ball, it was a much better zone in terms of the high strike. They would actually call it sometimes. But big thing I've noticed this year, the Double A zones, it feels way smaller than the big league zone when I watch big league games on TV. I don't know if the umpires are trying to make their mark or whatever, but we've had a couple games where some coaches have almost been thrown out of games just from arguing balls and strikes because they've shrunk the zone. I mean, to almost where you can put the ball over the plate and they're still calling balls. So it's tougher to pitch for sure, but just throwing down the middle probably does help with the Rays.
Yeah. And so after your junior Gonzaga, take us kind of through your draft process, talking with your agent, your advisor at the time, what were kind of the rounds you were hearing about? What were kind of your expectations? Did you feel like you got drafted higher or lower than what you were hearing? Go ahead and kind of walk us through that process.
I mean, I started the year, had a couple okay outings. I think I had a good one or a bad one, good one, bad one, something like that. And then I threw at the University of Tennessee against Chase Dolander, which was super cool. We went back and forth for 4 or 5 innings scoreless. And then obviously I ended up giving up a homer, like a solo shot, and then another solo shot, and then left some runners out there, and our bullpen, we cashed them all. So ended up taking the loss, but I think I punched 13 or something, like some number that was high. And that really put me on the map for getting scouted for professional baseball. I was already on the map kind of, but that might have bumped me up a couple rounds. And then had a good outing against BYU, and then I went down to Pepperdine. I had some arm injuries going in, like kind of a lingering elbow thing going into the Pepperdine, and I went down there, I walked like 5 or 6 in front of every single team. I mean, I remember my agent told me how many teams were going to be in the stands. And I think they didn't have fans. They weren't allowed to or something. It was just the whole middle section all the way up was just scouts from every team, regional cross-checkers. And they watched me come out at like 90 to 92 and walk five guys. That probably bumped me down a couple rounds from wherever I was trending. But going into the draft process, my agent told me about where I was going to end up, and it worked out just about perfectly. So I was super happy with how it went.
Yeah, were you with your family whenever you heard about your when you got drafted? Were you didn't play summer ball that year, did you?
No, I took the summer off, and I coached 18U baseball for my old high school club team. And then I was just sitting on the couch watching day two. It's for people that don't know, it's a very long day if you're not one of the first people picked on the, like, whether it's day one. If I think day one, you'll be all right if you're the end of day one. But day two starts on round, what, three, I think. Goes all the way to round 10. If you're at, like, if you're that last pick in the 10th round, I mean, you've been sitting there for hours, right? And then day three, obviously, if you can be the 11th, first pick of the 11th round, like, that's a pretty low stress day. You just wake up, watch the draft, and then get out of there. But if you're one of those later round picks, I mean, it's a long day watching all those names get picked. And I wouldn't say it was too long, but there was definitely like watching the first couple rounds, knowing I probably wasn't going to be a third or fourth rounder. But my agent's range was kind of that 5 to 7, 5 to 8 round range. And so watching all those picks, it's like, oh, here we go. But once I had some teams start getting interest, and then it was just a matter of whether I was going to get picked by that team in the 6th round or the 7th or the 8th, right? And then eventually I got a text from my agent and said, hey, make sure the TV's, like, make sure the volume's turned up. Or, hey, watch this next pick.
Yeah.
And then obviously I got drafted. Family was super happy, pretty excited. And my first call was from my area scout, who was actually, he lives in Gig Harbor, Washington. He's known me since I was, like, 15. And his first phone call with him, I'm not going to repeat what he said, but it wasn't exactly like a, hey, welcome to the Rays. It was more like a, like, let's go, we're fired up. So that was a pretty cool moment.
That's awesome. And so that first year, it was pretty normal. I know you and Will had a trip to the DR, and you guys got to see kind of how baseball was there, which is always, I think it's always good for guys to go down there, because you kind of got to figure out like where guys come from, and it's an interesting, everything I've heard, it's an interesting process down there. And but you threw one inning of pro ball that first year, Will. I think you were kind of the same, right? You had one outing and then that was it.
We had more, but they didn't actually get put up. We did a lot of like 5AB type stuff at first ball,
which is pretty normal for college guys. Like they don't, I mean, you just came off throwing 95 innings, so what's the point having you throw 30 or 40 more? Like, just kind of rest up, get you rolling. You got like a month left of the season anyways, month and a half, and then work in. So what was kind of your first year like? Like, did you get there and kind of see some guys throw, and you're like, wow, like I need to get better? Or did you feel like you kind of fit in? Like, where was that headspace at for that first, I guess, introduction to professional baseball?
I mean, right when I got there, it was not the same as when I got to Gonzaga, right? At Gonzaga, I was this young freshman coming in that didn't know how good everyone was going to be. I'm getting a pro ball. I knew that there were going to be some guys like Will Stevens that throw 100 miles an hour right off the gate. I didn't actually know how hard Will threw. I thought he was going to be like a mid to upper nines guy. And then somebody mentioned it. We looked on Twitter and he'd been up to, what, 102, 103, whatever it was. And we're like, oh, so this guy throws hard. And I think his first live AB came out sitting upper 90s. And I was like, well, you know, there probably won't be too many of those guys, right? And but I think half the draft class was throwing mid to upper nines. But the guys that weren't, like, there were a couple other guys that didn't throw 95, 98 miles an hour. The guys that are kind of that low to mid 90s range always have really good stuff or throw a lot of strikes. Or the biggest thing the Rays really love is having like carry fastballs, like having that induced vertical break, that ride that misses barrels. So that's something I figured out at some point in college, or definitely right when I got to pro ball, of I'm a big ride guy. Like, I have a lot of carry on my fastball, and throwing that up in the zone is going to get a lot of swing and miss. So I was never really that worried about fitting in terms of like getting a pro ball and watching guys that throw 100 miles an hour, because there were a lot of them for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I remember when you guys both got drafted. I think I group texted you guys. I was like, hey, when you guys go down there, this is this person. It was kind of cool to see like you guys ended up becoming friends and living together. And you know, as like a guy that coached both of you, I was like, I think you guys will get along. And I remember Owen texted me and he goes, you didn't tell me Will throws like 102. I was like, well, I told you he throws hard.
Yeah, exactly.
But so that next year, you kind of have your first full season. You kind of split your time, low A, high A. You throw 35 innings in A ball, then you get moved up to high A. You have a really good year. Let me see how many innings you threw total. So what would that be?
Will, you got it right there.
21 with 151 punch outs. You know, as your first full year, do you feel like you got into a good groove, like with your routine as a starter? Like, what do you feel like has really helped you in pro ball as opposed to college? Because the scheduling is different, right? You get Mondays off. In college, it's a little bit more predictable, right? Like, it's, you got a midweek game and then you got a weekend series and you have a lot of off days. So, like, where do you feel like the biggest change you had to do in your routine was to feel ready for those games?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like it was a lot easier in pro ball just because everything's so focused on getting you prepared and making sure you're getting better and ready to throw that next outing. In college, we have a mandatory off day. Our training room situation wasn't as good as it is in pro ball. There's less directed focus on trying to make you better. And like, we would have pitching coordinators fly in, and like every other week we're having some guy come in and, hey, here's what we want you to get better at this week, or here's what we think you could do better. So having all that, like the situation for like progress and development in minor league baseball, especially with the Rays, is it's just a great setup in terms of development. And just the way the season ended up going is kind of a similar story to my sophomore year at Gonzaga, where there was a guy up in high, one of the starters that got hurt. I was doing well in low A, but they needed to bump a starter up. So I was the first guy that moved out of the starting pitcher group. And then once I got there, every start, I'm sitting down with the pitching coach the next day talking about what went well, what I need to get better at, looking at zone rates, looking at swing and misses, looking at my personal stuff. A big thing, we try to get my slider firmer to get more swing and miss, and that ended up working out by the end of the year. And I felt like my routine was pretty good. The only thing that kind of dragged me down towards the end of the year was I ended up getting an arm injury right at the end of the season. I think a combination of all the trades that happened with the Rays, they brought in a bunch of starting pitchers. So we had guys start to piggyback, kind of that every 6 days that pro ball was giving me, to kind of change up a little bit. And then we also went on the road and rained out like 7 games in a row or something crazy. And that threw my routine off a little bit. And then down the stretch for playoffs, you only really need 2 or 3 starting pitchers. So I got thrown in the bullpen to kind of be a high leverage option. And when your arm's already kind of hanging, and then they say, hey, go throw one inning as hard as you can, I mean, I'm not going to shy away from that. I had a blast. I think I ended up throwing the seventh or the eighth inning, something like that, in our playoff series, and threw pretty well. But arm was hanging at the end of the season, and when I started ramping up in the off season, it just didn't feel right. So I got the MRI and ended up taking a bunch of weeks off and getting a slow ramp up this year. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. We won our championship in A ball, so pretty happy with that. Awesome. getting to celebrate at the end of the year.
That's awesome. And we just had, I don't know if you know the name Carter Jensen with the Royals, but he works out here, and he made the jump from high A to double A this year, and he was kind of talking about just the difference in kind of like preparation and things like that. So he was saying with the Royals, it was a lot more, because he's a catcher, it was a lot more like player-led meetings, the starter meetings. So like he said, he has a lot more homework to do, like, so he can talk to a pitcher like yourself and say like, hey, here's what I'm seeing with the hitters, you know, what are you seeing, like all that kind of stuff. Like, what's been the difference between just the day-to-day between high A and double A? Do you feel like there's just a lot more preparation that needs to go into it? Is it kind of you're just doing the exact same thing you did before? Like, where are you kind of at with all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty similar in terms of like scouting reports. One of the big things with the Rays is we want to throw our strengths, not the hitter's weaknesses. So I'm not going to shy away from what kind of pitcher I am. I throw a lot of fastballs. I'm never going to not throw fastballs just because the other team likes hitting fastballs. But the difference I've noticed in double A as opposed to high is like certain hitters have plans and they're a lot better at sticking to them. In high, a guy might come in wanting to sit dead red and hit a fastball, and then I throw a first pitch off speed and all of a sudden he's in between fastballs and sliders and kind of throws his whole at bat away because he gave up on his plan. Versus in double A, I've noticed guys are much more likely to stick to it. So like a normal plan off of me might be to just wait for the fastball and make sure you get on top of it. And so I might face a guy, go slider, slider. He's 0-2, and instead of being worried about the slider, he's still going to try to sit on the fastball, which means I can no longer just go fastball up for an easy punch out. He's going to be able to at least foul it off. And so just kind of watching swings and trying to realize what a guy's trying to do in the box and then pitch based on that, knowing that I have a good slider, a good changeup, and a good fastball. Like, that's what I'm throwing based on what they're showing me with their swings.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of just from the outside looking in, that's kind of what you see between, you know, that high A, double A jump. It's like you got guys that are just more adults, like they're older, They've seen a lot more. They're not, for the on the hitting side, they're not afraid to get to two strikes. I think when you get younger hitters, they'll press a lot early on, and they'll take like, well, that's a hittable pitch, so I'm going to swing at it. Whereas like, hey, are you able to do damage with that pitch? And they'll just kind of wait. And I think that's kind of what you're describing, is you're getting guys that are, they understand what you're throwing. They've seen it a lot more, or like somebody that is, you know, a close comparison to you. And so they can be like, oh, okay, so like this is what this guy, I remember facing a guy last year that was like this. And they can kind of carry over that same approach. Whereas like when you're rookie ball, low A, like you're getting a lot of young guys, you know, 18 to 22. And in double A, you're starting to get 23, 24, 25 year old, you know, men. And so that's a lot of what I've heard. And then going now that you've made a few starts in double A, do you feel like you're starting to get, you know, kind of your feet grounded, and obviously like your numbers aren't as good as they were last year. You're not doing bad by any means. And so what do you feel like your biggest takeaway has been through this first, what are we, like a third of the way through the year, quarter of the way through the year?
Yeah, I mean, getting into double A, obviously coming off an injury, got a slower ramp up. And even now, I think I might have just finished my pitch count limit, but I was building up with my first outing, I was only allowed to go 3 innings. My second outing, 4 was the max. And then my third outing, no more than this amount, right? So my outings have been kind of limited. But the biggest thing I was almost worried about early in the year was the swinging strikes that I didn't get. In high last year, between low A and high, I think I probably led minor league baseball in swinging strike rate with out of like the starters that threw a ton of innings. And then this year coming in, I couldn't get swing and miss at all my first couple outings. And I was like, is this double A? Like, I can't get, my stuff maybe isn't good enough, or like I'm just not getting my swinging strikes. Couple meetings with a pitching coach and saying, hey, just it's a small sample size, they're gonna come, you just need to execute pitches better. And then this past outing, I got some swing and miss again, just from locating pitches better and honestly just pitch selection. Like knowing that the outing before last, I threw 70% fastballs, right? Like every at bat, someone got a fastball. And so knowing that, going into my next outing, I started mixing more, throwing more off-speed pitches, pitching backward, all this kind of stuff that we've talked about. And once I started doing that, it made my fastball play better because guys are not able to just sit dead red on fastballs. So throwing a couple sliders early and then finishing with a fastball, all of a sudden I'm getting my swing and miss back. I feel like I'm back. I'm ready to go. And obviously we'll see it again tomorrow. But getting ahead of hitters and then finishing them off is that's kind of who I am as a pitcher. I'm not the guy that comes out, sits 100, and has a hard time finding the zone. There's some of those guys in pro ball, but I've only ever been up to 96, so I'm not really going to wow people with how hard I'm throwing like some of these guys that are sitting 98, 99. So just attacking the strike zone is the biggest thing I've had to try to do more in double A. Not that I wasn't doing it in high A, but mixing pitches and getting ahead of hitters and then throwing strike to ball to try to get them swing and miss.
Yeah, that kind of goes back to some of our original conversation where, you know, like you were saying, like that's why those live at-bats are so important. Like, your stuff can read great on, you know, the TrackMan. Like, yeah, you're going to get a lot of double-A guys out. You know, you're going to get swing and miss, you know, all the stuff. But you kind of got to experience it. And you got to figure out, like you were saying, like, man, I'm not getting as much swing and miss. And do I keep doing what I'm doing? And, like, hope that it works out. Is my stuff not good enough? And that's why those starts are so important, because it's like, well, now, you know, I've got to make an adjustment. I can't just throw 70% fastballs every single game. I've got to show that I can do something else so that I can put that in the hitter's head and get them in between pitches. And then, you know, sometimes I'm finishing up and away with my fastball. Sometimes I'm going to, you know, drop in a changeup with two strikes, got to show that so that I can set them up for a fastball up or a fastball in, or start, you know, slider. You know, because like you're saying, your bread and butter is your fastball. And so it's like, well, how can I get to my fastball in these leverage, you know, counts where I can get guys out? What do I got to do before that? And kind of like learning that, you know, chess match, you know, with different levels when you get better hitters that are more committed to their, you know, their approach. And, you know, the higher up you go, the less like, you know, free swing and auto outs you get, you know. Yeah. Like there's more of those, you know, the lower levels you go. And then you hear, you know, I was just listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about the Dodgers, and they're like, yeah, they just control the zone really well. Like the Dodgers lineup, you know, and obviously they've got three of the best hitters in the game in their lineup, so that makes it easier. But you know, when you get to those big league hitters, like, they know the zone, they know what they can do well, and they know what they don't do well, and they're not willing to, like, go away from that until they absolutely have to. And so, like, just learning how to do that and attack guys without, like you're saying, like, I can't just attack their weaknesses, because if it says, like, oh, they can't hit a curveball, it's like, well, if my curveball sucks, they're still going to hit a really bad curveball. So, like, kind of figuring all that out. So
that's a really conversation cool. I had with our catching coordinator came through last week or 2 weeks ago. Was every single batter, I mean, I was doing a really good job of getting to two strikes, but what he was telling me was, once I get to two strikes, it's like, well, what now, right? And like a lot of batters, I get there by going fastball, it's 0-2 now. But now it's like, if I want to finish with fastball up, it's not going to be as effective because I've already shown them two fastballs in a row. Right. And so, like, mm-hmm. I was doing a great job of getting to two strikes, but it was the way that I was getting to two strikes might have been the problem. Because if I'm fastball, the guy's late, I can't exactly go with an off-speed pitch now in zone, which kind of ruins my whole plan of how am I going to get him out. And so recognizing that and trying to mix it early, that way I can finish with a fastball or whatever different way of getting hitters out. It's like, we got to be more conscious of how we get to two strikes versus just getting there.
Yeah. And like, that's kind of where the art to baseball is, right? Because that's why it's fun watching the big league games, because it's like, I mean, you know, I'm just a random guy that, you know, works at a facility, and I can pull up Baseball Savant and know exactly what a pitcher does well and exactly what a hitter does well. And it's like, well, this guy hits what this pitcher's strength is. So you're just kind of like, all right, let's put the chips on the table and see who wins today. And then there's other times where it's like, okay, this guy doesn't hit well what this pitcher pitches to. So like, how is he going to win the day? And that's kind of where the cool part of like what we were talking about earlier, like, how are you going to compete? Like, oh, you don't have Ride on your fastball today? Well, like, what are you going to do? Because your team, you know, is still depending on Owen Wild to throw 5 to 6 innings and give us a shot to win. You can't just, you know, get bounced in the second inning and come in and be like, oh, sorry, guys, I just didn't have my Ride fastball today. You know, my bad. And then just go there, because, I mean, you know, the pitching staff isn't, you know, sitting there going like, hey, this guy's a really good pitcher, so I guess we'll just only score, you know, one run, no runs today. That's okay. Like, it's not how that works. Like, you got to figure out how to compete and win a game. And it's just what you were talking about. Like, we got to figure out, like, with what you have that day, because you're never going to have, like, your 23, 24-inch Ride fastball every day. You know, the best guys in the league don't have it every single start. So, but yeah. And I think just figuring that out with the AA hitters, like, how can I get outs on my bad days? Because anybody can get outs on their good day. You know, it's the guys that can get outs when they're not at their best and do it consistently. That's what makes guys good. But yeah, other than that, Owen, how are you feeling for your start tomorrow?
Feel good. Yeah, feel good? Ready to go.
Yeah.
Got this Thursday, Sunday again. We are playing. Oh, that's a good question. Oh, we're playing Pensacola, Marlins affiliate.
Okay. Have you guys thrown against them yet, or have you thrown against them?
They went to Pensacola week 2, but I was still in the complex and extended, so I haven't seen them yet. Apparently, their best hitter is already up in AAA. I think they also just got swept this past week, so hopefully start putting good starts together again.
That's awesome. So what else you got planned for the year? What are some of your goals? Like, do you have any goals before the year? Or you just kind of like take it day by day, kind of see what's coming on?
Yeah, I mean, week by week. Last year I felt like I was just in this big rush to get promoted to Bowling Green, and then even once I got there, I was throwing well enough to try to get promoted to Montgomery. And then at this point, I feel like it's less about trying to make it to AAA as it is about getting better as a pitcher. I mean, you see pitchers all the time get promoted from AA. We played against Rocket City's the Angels. Obviously, they promote guys fast, but they had a reliever that came out. He was 97-99 at 20 inches of carry, struck out the side twice in 1 week. Like, he was pretty good. And then he got the call, went straight to the bigs 2 weeks later or the next week. And so, like, guys will That's get crazy. Promoted straight from AA. But the biggest thing is it's not just the Rays that I'm pitching for right now. Like, obviously, I would love to debut and make the big leagues for the Rays. But if there's value in me pitching well and they deal me off in a trade, I mean, I could go make the big leagues with any team in the league. So just making sure I'm spending every week, every moment that I'm trying to get better instead of just trying to make it to the next level or trying to do whatever. Like, there's some things I need to be able to do to get out at AAA and in the big leagues that I'm either not showing enough right now, or maybe I do need to get better at it. And so just trying to make sure I'm getting better as a pitcher week by week is my biggest goal right now.
Yeah. And we usually like to end kind of like on a fun note. So maybe you can talk about some of your favorite teammates you've had, minor leagues, college, and then maybe you can talk about why, you know, a couple of them are Will Stevens and Mason Marenko. You can kind of end on that and kind of talk about some of the guys that you've enjoyed playing with over the years.
I mean, the most fun playing with I've had, I've got to say, is this guy named Zach McLeod. back up in the Alaska club. We played some basketball.
That's right.
He did talk about his age quite often, but I thought he could get up and down the court pretty well. Good teammates I've had. Yeah, Will Stevens, obviously, he's got to be up there. Great teammate, great guy. Always has the backs of his other players. Funny moment I can remember is I think we were in, what was it, Will, Kannapolis? Or was it the Nationals?
Oh, it was Kannapolis.
It was Kannapolis.
I know what you're talking about. Yes. It was Kannapolis.
We went to Kannapolis. We were having a good back and forth with them. We were playing pretty well. I think we had a starter get injured, and so he came in out of the bullpen, and he was throwing against somebody. No. Sorry, I'm mixing it up. One of our starters, Latin guy, throws really hard, pretty good pitcher, gave up a homer to another Latin player, and he hit the piss out of it and bat flipped and jogged around the bases and was doing his thing. As a pitching staff, including our pitching coach, we decided just collectively that we weren't going to put up with that. Like, you can't showboat after hitting a homer like that. I think the exact words were, we need to do something about this. And somebody said, don't worry, pitching coach, like, we got this. And the next day, our starter, this was a guy that comes out, he's going to be 6-8, maybe touch 99, didn't do anything about it, right? And so he just kind of got his five. He got his five or six, and put us in a spot to win. And then Will Stevens came in out of the bullpen. The player in question was hitting second that inning. So we were thinking, man, maybe Will just punches out the first guy, and then he can just go ahead and drill this next guy. We'll be in a great spot. We all knew Will's the guy that would do it. He's sticking up for his teammates. The only problem is the first guy was a five pitch walk.
It was a five-pitch walk, maybe a six.
And it's like, this is like a save or a hold situation. Like, it's not really the time to be messing around here. And, you know, that troublemaker got in the box, and Will set him straight with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, which did ultimately put two guys on base. And I want to say two of them scored, or somebody. The game got pretty interesting after that. But just
love the message was set.
Yeah, I love playing with a guy that's willing to stick up for his teammates like that. I mean, it's a game changer. He takes care of his other pitchers, so love to play with a guy like that.
That's awesome. Well, do you have any comments, or did that pretty much sum it up?
Well, I think that, married with the barehanded double play opportunity that I threw about 300 feet to the center field.
Forgot about that.
Those two in the same inning, I think, is really what did
it. So just there. A nightmare yes. situation. Yeah. The only thing that people need to remember is that you have your teams
yes.
back.
And yes. we won the game. Really, it didn't matter.
I put my team in a position to win.
Yeah,
kept us in a position to win, right?
Yeah.
We did end
That's
up
awesome.
Winning.
Well, you know, likewise, Owen, it was always fun coaching you, you know. It was great being your basketball teammate one time. That was fun. And, you know, we can maybe do that again whenever you're not playing. I'm sure that's against your contract, but, you know.
Oh, we can shoot some hoops if I ever come through Kansas City.
We have a hoop here.
Yeah.
Well, you were supposed to.
Yeah.
You were supposed to this year.
I was
plans change.
If I wanted to play catch before January, I would have been there.
But yeah, man, well, we're excited. I'm always keeping tabs on you. So I was really excited to see that you made your double-A debut this year. And so it'll be fun keeping – I always – kind of look at the end of the night, see who's throwing and hitting that, you know, I've either coached or guys coming through our facility. And, you know, it's been fun seeing you get a bunch of outs this past year and a half. And, you know, we're obviously rooting for you. And it was a fun having you on the interview. I don't know. That's all I think all I got. Will, what about you?
Go get them, brother.
All right, dude.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Like and subscribe.